Glad you're with us on River to River. I'm Ben Stanton, in for Ben Kiefer. It's a News Buzz edition of our program. Coming up, we'll be talking with a member of the gold medal sled hockey team who just returned from the 2014 Paralympic Winter Games in Sochi at the same venue where the Olympic Games were held. But before we get there, the NCAA college basketball tournament is beginning, and some people get swept up in the predictions, the stats, the brackets, office pools, and the stories behind March Madness, not to mention, I suppose, watching actual games. Other people won't watch a single game, though. Regardless, it does capture the attention of many people to talk through what's happening and what's to come and why we might want to care. Bryce Miller, sports columnist at the Des Moines Register, is joining us. Thank you, Bryce, for being on.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Just fine. Welcome back to the program. Thanks. You know, I thought maybe we could start with a quote that I found from Roger Sherman, who's a sports writer for SB Nation. He sums things up like this. He says, college basketball is a sport where teams spend 5 months deciding which teams are good, then we throw 68 of them in a ring with knives, and if they lose a single game, they die. It's a really stupid idea, but fun things happen. So maybe a little exaggeration with the weapons imagery there, but he says a stupid idea, but fun things happen. Is that a fair way to look at things?
I think so. It's kind of a modern-day Roman gladiator situation, the way he explained it, but it's really true. I think emotionally, as you measure the excitement of fans, I think they do kind of live and die on their teams in those games, because it really is a sport that builds to this single tournament moment. That's what makes basketball so unique. It has this vehicle at the end that rushes you to the finish line, and as we saw on yesterday's first day of the regular tournament, you know, I'm going to admit I didn't have all these picked, but Dayton beats Ohio State and North Dakota State wins. I mean, those upsets are what kind of, define this tournament. I think you get a lot of non-basketball fans who really follow it, because it's not just about basketball. It's about the picking. It's about the enjoyment of watching and debating your picks. And I think a lot of people who maybe don't follow the sport think they like to root for the underdog in life a little bit, not even just in a basketball sense. So I think you get some people who really enjoy seeing the Daytons and North Dakota States charge ahead, rock the world a little bit, and just for a moment have their spot in the sun.
Well, you mentioned underdogs, and I know the Hawkeye men have been eliminated from the tournament already. Cyclones men play tonight, but how does Iowa fit into the expectations game? Not exactly the biggest underdogs, but not number one. How where are they?
Well, if you're talking about Iowa, I think it's a real mixed bag what people think about the Hawkeyes. They had such a great start. I think there was so much momentum preseason and early in the season. They were trying to return to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2006, and that's a long drought. And they did that. They made the first four games in Dayton and played Tennessee, but they lost six of their last seven in the regular season and then fell in that game. So I think just the way the season ended was disappointing for a lot of fans and people. So kind of a mixed bag in terms of that. It was an accomplishment, though, to get back to the tournament for the first time in 8 years.
All right. Okay, so that's the Hawkeyes there. What about ISU plays tonight? What about the Cyclones?
Well, Iowa State's on an incredible roll. They just won the Big 12 tournament. I was in Kansas City covering that. They've had to beat four NCAA tournament teams in the last four games, including the three in Kansas City, to get there. They've, you know, three players on the all-tournament team, DeAndre Kane, George Niang, Melvin Edgem, who's the Big 12 Player of the Year, just playing with a ton of confidence. I think people would be a little disappointed if they didn't do it a little damage in the brackets. There's a lot of excitement under Fred Hoiberg and what he's done since he's been there, and this team in particular. A lot of people have taken them as far, looking ahead of, you know, a possible rematch in 2000. They played Michigan State in the Elite Eight with a shot at the Final Four. If they're able to kind of advance that far, that game is a possible matchup down the road. And that's what the NCAA tournament, I think, is about. Everybody kind of looks at, you know, this game and that game and where it could lead. And I think it's a book that kind of unfolds in front of you. You don't know the next chapter. You don't know the chapter after that. And I think that's what makes it exciting.
That's right. And as we mentioned, Cyclones are playing tonight. And who are they playing?
Your favorite team and mine, I'm guessing North Carolina Central. Had you heard of them before this tournament or before I just mentioned them?
Yeah, they're on the list somewhere, but I don't think many people have them on the radar.
Yeah, you normally when you say North Carolina, they're thinking about the team they might play in the next round, the North Carolina Tar Heels, and they have an Iowan on that team. Their star guard is Marcus Page, who played at Linmar, and it's kind of a one game at a time scenario in the tournament. And Iowa State knows that. They lost to Hampton, a huge upset earlier in their tournament history. Iowa lost to Northwestern State. Lower seeds are, you know, that's the great thing about the tournament. Anything can happen. So you start with one North Carolina, and if things go well for Iowa State, they have the chance to play another.
Okay, well, good luck to them. And also talk about, just briefly, the women's NCAA begins this weekend, and both the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones also playing their first games this weekend. How do those teams look?
Well, in great situations in women's basketball in the state of Iowa, because both Iowa State and Iowa host regional tournaments. Iowa State is hosting in Ames. If they win their opener, they could, you know, both teams, if they win their openers, could face, you know, two of the best teams in the country. Iowa State could advance to meet Stanford. Iowa could advance to meet Louisville. And working on something for the Des Moines Sunday Register, I'm doing a big profile on Lisa Bluter, the coach at Iowa, who just became the winningest coach in Iowa basketball history, and that's men and women. She just passed Tom Davis, so she has more wins at Iowa than Vivian Stringer, Tom Davis, Lou Dolson, Ralph Miller, Sharm Sherman. It's quite an accomplishment, and she's in her 14th year there. And so, you know, just two regional sites less than, you know, 2.5 hours apart. If you're a basketball fan and you're not at a men's tournament game, there are plenty of opportunities to see the NCAA women as well.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that story about Lisa Bluter coming up. Bryce Miller, sports columnist with the Des Moines Register. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Anytime.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Stanton. A News Buzz edition of the program today. The 2014 Paralympic Games have come to a close. Those were held in Sochi, Russia, following the conclusion of the Olympic Games. The Paralympics collect the best athletes from around the world with physical disabilities and who use adaptive equipment. But if you've seen Paralympic athletes competing, the word disability is probably not the first word that comes to mind, since they're doing things most people cannot do. One sport, sled hockey, is played just like conventional hockey, except participants are sitting on an ice sled and have two short hockey sticks that are used to hit the puck and to propel themselves along the ice. Also like conventional hockey, it moves fast and athletes hit hard. The USA sled hockey team has brought home another gold medal after a final match on Saturday against Russia on their home turf. And there are two Iowans on that gold medal team, Kevin McGee and my next guest, Andy Yohe from Bettendorf. He's also the team captain. Andy Yohe, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
Well, this wasn't your first Paralympics, so I know that you had some idea about what you were getting into, but talk a little bit briefly about what your expectations were about the travel and the games themselves.
Well, our expectations going in was we'd heard a lot of things about the games and about Russia and, you know, some not-so-positive things. But as far as the competition goes, we were expecting to go back and defend our gold medal, and that's what we went there to do was to defend that gold. So we had pretty high expectations going in. When we actually got to Russia, we found that the venues were just beautiful. They did a great job with them. The village that we stayed in was really nice. They really did a terrific job. We got to play in some awesome games with some really high energy crowds, so it was really cool.
And we'll get to that in just a second, but so it sounds like, you know, all this talk we heard of hotel rooms being inadequate, that wasn't your experience?
No, that was not my experience at all, nor than my family's, that my dad and my brother went to Russia, and their hotel that they stayed in was really nice.
Well, take us through what happened. There was a number of teams you played, including, as I mentioned, Russia, but you also played another rival, Canada, and a number of other teams. What was the process of the games you played?
First, we had to go up against Italy, and Italy's gotten a lot better since the last time we played them, so it was a tough game, but we did win 5-1. Then we played Korea after that. We won 3-0 against Korea, and our next game was against Russia, and we got the experience of playing Russia in their own building there on their soil. It was really cool. It was a sold-out venue, and everything was just as we expected. The crowd was really against us, but really high energy, and we still really enjoyed that game, but we lost 2-1 in that game. So that we still qualified for the semifinal, and we went up against Canada in the semifinal. We knew we were going to have to play Canada in the tournament anyways. Canada's really good, and so we know it's at some point in time to win that gold medal, we'd have to play them. So we got our chance. We won 3-0 against Canada, and that was a really great moment for our team because, you know, I think everybody in North America now knows that the U.S.-Canada rivalry is pretty hot in the hockey world. So
that's right.
It was a really, really great moment for our team to be able to send Canada to the bronze medal game, and that put us in the gold medal game against Russia.
Well, and before you get to that, just briefly again on Canada, talk about your confidence level going into the final game after that game against Canada, because as you mentioned, Canada, very good team, and in fact, this year they're supposed to be better, and they certainly were a tough team, but coming off 3-0, it must have felt good.
It was great. Our team probably played the best team game we played in many years. You know, the guys were just moving the puck so well. Everybody was flying around out there and, you know, just delivering big hits. So I was really personally proud of the guys for showing up like that after that loss to Russia. I think that kind of sparked us and really got us refocused on what we were there to do and lit a fire under some guys. So some of those losses are a good thing early on in the tournament.
And the final game, the gold medal game, 1-0 win of the U.S. against Russia. At what point during that game did you feel pretty confident that was going to be the final score?
We knew going in that their goaltender was playing really well and that they're a good physical team. And so we knew it was going to be a battle. We didn't think that it was going to be a blowout or anything. We knew that in the first game that we were able to kind of dominate play with our speed. And so we wanted to go in there and do the same thing and control the puck. And that's what we were able to do against those guys. And really, they didn't get many quality shots on goal. And we have an amazing goaltender. Steve Cash is the best goaltender in the world, has been for many years. So we were really confident in him. And, you know, we just went out there and played our game, good defense. And then when we get our chances, we got to bury him. So that's, luckily enough, Josh Sweeney was able to put one past the goaltender there in the second period.
Well, before I let you go, Andy Yohe, there's been so much interest in what's happening in Ukraine and the Crimean region. And how much of that were you hearing about during your time in Sochi? Were people paying attention to what was happening with Russia and Ukraine? To what level?
It wasn't too much different than it is here in the U.S. It seemed, you know, obviously, there wasn't much to watch on TV there, so we saw lots of CNN. And, you know, CNN was obviously doing a lot of coverage of it. But there really wasn't a lot of talk about it, actually, in the games and, you know, with the volunteers and stuff. The people of Russia, the volunteers and everything, were just great to us. So there really wasn't much political talk. That's an unfortunate situation over there, but really we were there to do a job, and we were kind of focused on that.
Very good. Well, again, congratulations, and thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Again, Andy Yohe of Bettendorf, Iowa, member of the gold medal U.S. sled hockey Paralympic team, recently returned from their competition in Sochi, Russia. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.